Okay. The other type that's much more likely to be available is x is independent of y given z. And here x and y and z can actually be sets of variables. A set of variables x are independent of another set of variables y given a set of variables and their values. Okay? And if you have these kinds of assertions, then they can be used to reduce the amount of numbers that you have to provide, and also of course inference also will be easier. Okay? So then we started talking about this, and then we came up with the idea that why not write down all the conditional independence assertions that hold in a domain. Okay? And the problem of course is, you know, in general there may be many, many conditional independences, because x is a set of variables, y is a set of variables, z is a set of variables. Okay? And so if you have n variables, then these are all subsets, and so there can be exponential number of, you know, conditional independence assertions. And what you would like to do is write some of the direct ones and let the other ones be implicitly derived by the system. Okay? So that's where we get to Bayes networks. And then so Bayes networks are essentially one graphical way of writing conditional independence assertions. We'll talk about, you know, depending on the time, we might talk about a different graphical model called random fields, Markov random fields. And the difference is, it turns out that Bayes networks given the topology of Bayes network, certain independence assertions are built in. So if you draw this picture like this here, then you are essentially saying weather is independent of all these guys, because there is no connection. Okay? And furthermore, in this particular case, toothache is independent of catch given cavity. Okay, so the minimum independence assertions that are input in a Bayes network is that every node is independent of its ancestors. In fact, every node is independent of its non-descendants given its immediate parents. Okay, this guy is not a descendant. Okay, and if there is somebody on top of cavity, those are also not descendants. So this guy will be independent of these guys and those guys given its immediate parents. Okay, and from that you can get lots of other independence assertions that can be derived. In fact, it's actually cute to try and figure out, given a reasonably large size Bayes network, checking whether or not a particular independence holds. And for that there are ideas like deseparation and baseball, which we may or may not talk about later on. But the minimum you need is to understand that a node is independent of its non-descendants given its immediate parents. And if you don't believe that, don't write that. Do you understand what I'm saying? There's no magic in this picture. You wrote this picture. If you didn't believe that toothache is independent of catch given cavity, then you shouldn't have drawn this picture. It's all in your hand. If you think, for example, sometimes toothaches themselves cause a little bit extra, you know, likelihood of catches, or somehow this sometimes gives extra information about this, even over and above this, then you need to put an extra link from there. Okay. In Bayes networks, the links are directional. But don't think that the directionality means causality. We will actually be looking in a minute that if you draw the Bayes network in the direction of causality, you wind up having to assess only causal probabilities. And we spent a lot of time last class talking about how assessing causal probabilities is much more easier, and they're also likely to be more stable than assessing diagnostic probabilities. But Bayes network itself, just because you put a link there doesn't mean it's in the causal direction. Okay, so you are the domain expert. This is X, this is Y, this is Z. And if you wind up putting X here, Y here, Z here, and if you wind up putting them in the causal order, you wind up having to only compute the causal probability. Okay. So then the interesting thing, of course, is if you have these independent, so this is what we are saying. So what are the conditional independence assertions that are implicit in Bayes' nets? The minimum you need to know is node is independent of its non-descendants, basically including ancestors and siblings. Okay. Given its immediate parents. Okay. So for example, the picture that we've been looking at for a long time, burglary, earthquake, alarm, John calls, Mary calls, right? Okay, so tell me, is John calling independent of Mary calling given alarm? Okay, is burglary independent of earthquake given nothing? Because they have no parents, so you don't need to give any parents. So burglary is independent of earthquake given its immediate parents, and these are, you know, they don't have parents, so you don't have to give anything. Okay, and similarly, is John calling independent of earthquake given alarm? Yes. Okay, and furthermore, is John calling and Mary calling independent of burglary and earthquake given alarm? This is like a more general conditional assertion where essentially you are talking about sets are independent of sets, given sets. This too is true. Right? Now, I already showed you there's a whole bunch of assertions that I can write given just this structure. What we are interested in doing is not writing down all these assertions. It is essentially to exploit them in doing the probability computations. Okay, so the point that, so by the way, so these are like essentially the pictorial representation of that first rule I was talking about. If you provide the immediate parents of X, then X is independent of its siblings as well as basically all its non-descendants, its siblings as well as siblings' children as well as its ancestors. But it's not independent of its descendants. It's not independent of its descendants. So then you can say, is there like a blanket of variables such that if I give you those blanket of variables, then this variable will be independent of everybody else in the world? Okay, and you know that's Linus with his security blanket. So you want a Markov blanket, okay, for each variable such that if you provide its Markov blanket, then it doesn't care about the rest of the world. And all you essentially need to do is throw in, apart from the immediate parents, you need to throw in your immediate children, and the children's other parents. So this is the nuclear family. So my parents, my children's other parents. So if you're divorced or separated, you have extra spouses lying around, they're all also counted. And that's a nice, happy nuclear family. Okay, and then once you know this, nobody else, you know, you don't care about what happens to the rest of the world. Okay, that's Markov blanket. Okay, but you really wind up needing only to use this most of the time. But this also holds. And then even more independence assertions hold, essentially, given this and this, in fact, these two are equivalent already, and given these, you can actually show, given any set of, you know, given any independence assertion, you can check whether or not it is true, using an idea called deseparation idea. But I can go into that, but I would not right now. Instead, I want to use what little I know, which is this minimum, okay, to actually do the inference. Yes, sir?
Is the Markov blanket just the parents, or is it all the ones that now independent?
What's
the Markov blanket with these two pictures?
No. This is the Markov blanket. In this particular case, what I'm saying is X is independent of the whole wide world if you give the state of its parents, its children, and its children's other parents.
Okay, so everybody.
That's it. Okay, then it's given this, then it's independent of everybody else. Here, given just the immediate parents, it still is independent of all its non-descendants, but it's not independent of its descendants anymore.
Okay. So if you have the one on the right, then you can totally isolate.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, that's why, yeah. So this is, in fact, these, one of the interesting things to understand is how these independence assertions get used. They get used in the design of the inference algorithms for Bayes networks. Okay, one of the interesting things is you don't even need to know what independence assertions hold if you just have to use Bayes networks. In fact, you don't need to know anything about computer science if you want to use computer science tools, right? You don't need to be in any class. But in terms of, even if you're interested in just using Bayes networks, you don't need to know what independence assertions hold in the Bayes network, really, okay? But the people who design the algorithms, which you would be one of them if you're a computer science student, needs to know what assertions hold so that you can prove the correctness of the algorithm. Okay, we will use this in design, in basically giving the local semantics to global semantics for the Bayes network. That's, we discussed that last time, I'm going to repeat it today. And then this Markov blanket is actually going to be useful when you essentially develop sampling-based approaches for inference in Bayes networks. Okay, and that's further down. Okay, but again, as I said, it's the reason you understand this is to understand the correctness of the algorithms. You don't wind up needing to use them in day-to-day life. Yes?
Doesn't it look like derived this, we have to calculate a whole lot from
what?
You said to calculate this to enumerate these possibilities.
I don't need to. All I'm saying is these all hold.
Right, but.
Okay, but normally what you're interested in is given some things, what's the probability of something happening? Okay? And basically, all I need to tell you is that if I specify the Bayes network, then I have a way of computing the unique joint probability distribution that is represented by this network. And once I provide that, you have the semantics.
But to get to there, you have to do a whole lot of calculations.
No. To get to here, all you need to do, we'll get to it in a minute, but suppose in trying to decide this particular thing, all you need to do is sort of, we'll get there in a minute, but in general, if you know about the causality of the domain, then introduce variables into the network in the causal order. That means, you know, put the causes first and then the symptoms next. If you do that, then after providing the topology of the network, notice that the topology of the network essentially is enough to understand the conditional independences. But after you provide the topology of the network, then you provide these conditional probability tables. And the CPT is essentially, for each node, all you need to provide is the distribution of that node given its immediate parents. That's it. Distribution of the node given its immediate parents. Okay? Now, so basically, as I said last time around, you know, these are the only numbers you need to provide to specify this particular network. Okay, and once I specify this, all I need to now know is why does this, you know, represent a consistent joint distribution? I mean, is there a joint distribution that is represented by this? If there is one, then the semantics are rock solid, right? Because once I have a joint distribution, then every possible probabilistic query has a unique answer with respect to the joint distribution. You may not always wind up computing probabilities that way. You don't necessarily have to write the entire joint distribution to answer simple probabilistic queries. But if you want to prove to yourself that there will be answers, all you need to know is that there is a consistent joint distribution. Okay? And to do that, all I wind up needing to do is, so for example, if I needed to compute one of the entries in the joint probability distribution, okay, let's say John calls, Mary calls, alarm goes off, and no burglary and no earthquake. That's one of the entries in the joint distribution. If I tell you how to compute that, you know how to compute all the other ones. Right? And how do I compute this? Basically, I use the chain rule. This can be written as John calls given Mary, alarm, not burglary, not earthquake, times Mary, alarm, not burglary, not earthquake. And then that can again be written as Mary calls, alarm, not burglary, not earthquake, times alarm, not burglary, not earthquake, which can again be written this way. This is the chain rule. Okay, in doing, in writing this, I didn't do any magic. All I did was I just noticed that P A and B is P A given B times P B. That's it. That's just the definition of conditional probabilities. Okay, now at this point, suddenly I need these numbers. If I know these numbers, I get this number. This is where the conditional independences come to my rescue. So John calls, given Mary alarm, not burglary, not earthquake, John calls given all these other guys is the same as John calls given just this guy. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so this is really nothing but John calls given alarm. And similarly, this is nothing but Mary calls given alarm. And this is nothing but itself, because alarm is dependent on both of them, according to your network. And then this is not B given earthquake. Burglary and earthquake are independent of each other, right? So it's just not B and earthquake.
You have to have a topological ordering to do this, right?
What?
You have to know the topology to do this.
Yes, you have a base network in front of you right now.
But like for big ones.
Yeah. I mean, no, all I'm saying is that the entire joint distribution can be written as the product of the entries in the CPTs of the base network. Because we agreed that when we said this is the base network, we know what numbers we have to give. That you agreed. But then I have to tell you that if you give me these numbers, I will have a joint distribution for you. And you know, you want to know that I will not be making up numbers that have no theoretical basis. Here is my theoretical basis, because there is a joint distribution. Yes, sir.
So the burglary and the earthquake is independent, but it's not a conditionally independent given alarm, right?
Yes, but I didn't ask that. See, that's a very good point. See, notice that in writing this, I wrote the chain rule in one way. Okay, so basically, I wound up writing the chain rule in the causal, in the order in which the, in the opposite order in which the network is. But that's not hard. I can look at the network and write down what I need to write. Okay, there are bunches. So, but I never asked you, is burglary given? I never asked you for a number saying burglary given alarm and earthquake. I didn't ask that in my write-up. This is the point. So in fact, in writing these joint distributions, essentially if you write the chain rule in the anti-causal direction, I mean in the anti-topological direction, okay, then essentially you would be able to read off the number from the CPTs itself. Okay. So this, by the way, you should understand this. If you don't understand this, you have no hope of understanding base network. So make sure that you know, given a base network, you will be able to write the joint distribution entry right away. So make up your own network and be able to write it. Because this is like the bedrock. Okay? You will never really do it this way, because if you do it this way, it will take too long. But this is the semantics for the network configuration. Yes, sir.
Is there any point of writing probabilities from, you know, top to bottom?
No, basically the point of writing it this way is because I know that my parents will be shielding me from my siblings and my ancestors. Because that's just part of the network assumption.
But the thing is, burglary and earthquake are independent as it is. They don't have any parents.
Yeah.
So
that's why basically, no, but the point is, I asked, my normal chain rule would ask me for this probability. But that is nothing but just this. All I'm trying to tell you is every joint distribution can be computed, I mean every joint distribution entry can be computed as a simple product of numbers from these tables which you gave me. Yes, sir.
At the beginning you have not written
anything,
and then
you switched to. Well, yes, what did you say? Oh yeah, I made a mistake here. I mean, no, I think there's a typo. I should correct it. So I wrote it only for earthquake instead of for not earthquake. That's a good point. I'll change that. Okay. But it shows that I can actually compute two different numbers right now. But you know, but you can compute every entry. That's the point. I mean, it's a typo. It's a very good point you made. And so put variables in the reverse topological sort, apply the chain rule. And then you're done. Okay. By conditional independence inherent to the Bayes network, the local semantics which say that every node is independent of its non-descendants given its immediate parents can be used to provide the global semantics, which means there is an actual joint distribution. Here's my question. Suppose, so basically there was, if you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 variables, right? If you don't have, if I don't tell you anything, I just tell you that there are 5 Boolean variables, how many joint distributions are there on 5 Boolean variables? How many distinct joint distributions are there on 5 Boolean variables? What? How many distinct joint probability distributions are there on 5 variables? What? What is the joint distribution? 32 numbers that add up to 1. How many different ways can you get 32 numbers between 0 and 1 that add up to 1? What? Infinite number of joint distributions. Okay? Now I have a Bayes network. So those 5 variables could have basically been influencing each other in all sorts of ways. But now I'm telling you they're influencing each other in this particular way. So how many joint distributions are there? So if I just gave you the Bayes network topology, right? How many joint distributions are there that are going to be potentially consistent with the Bayes network? Infinite. So what did I gain? No. What did I gain? So there were infinite number of joint distributions before. There's still infinite number of joint distributions now. So what if I just give you some random joint distribution and say, yeah, that's consistent with the Bayes network. Can you call my bluff? Do you understand what I'm saying? So here is another way of thinking about it. Suppose, think of a number. You can think of how many numbers? Infinite number of, think of an integer. You can think of infinite number of integers. Now I'm going to tell you, think of an integer such that it is a product of exactly 15 primes, 15 different primes. Think of an integer such that it's exactly a product of 15 different primes. You know that all integers can be written as their prime factors, right? I want you to now only think of numbers that are actually products of 15 unique prime numbers. Can you think of, how many numbers can you think of now? Still infinite. But is the same number of infinities, is it possible to have thought of a number previously that won't be consistent now because I can prime factorize it and call your bluff? Do you understand what I'm saying? So what Bayes network provides you is the reduction in the number of joint distributions, just the same way you are able to reduce the number of integers you can think of. Even though you still have infinite number of numbers left, these numbers actually have a certain property. They must be uniquely factorizable into 15 prime numbers. And similarly, a joint distribution that is consistent with Bayes network will be factorizable into a product of 5 tables. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay? And so, in fact, that provides you a way of calling my bluff. If I give you a joint distribution and say, oh no, believe me, this is a joint distribution for this network, you can sometimes say, no, that's not possible. Do you understand that? Okay? So now the next thing, of course, that I want to talk about is, here I provided a joint distribution from the Bayes network topology, and furthermore, now that I have a joint distribution, I know how to do inference on the network. So at the minimum, you know how to do inference on the network already. The big difference was previously you'd have needed 32 numbers or 31 numbers to specify a joint distribution on 5 variables. Now you only are going with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 numbers. What would be the least number of numbers you can provide for providing, a joint distribution on 5 variables? Least number of numbers. That would be 5. And that would correspond to what base network? Basically 5 nodes that are not connected. They're disconnected. What would be the most number of numbers you can provide? 32, 31. What would that base network look like? It's essentially a complete directed graph. It has to be directed, so there can't be any cycles. It's a complete directed graph. So first guy is connected to all the n minus 1 guys. Okay. The second guy is connected to n minus 2 guys. Third guy is connected to n minus 3 guys, and so on. And you can do the math, and you'll find that that will be exactly 2 power n minus 1 numbers in all the CPTs together. So base network is a rope. You can use it to hang yourself, right? Or you can use it to reduce the number of numbers you need by correctly looking at the domain, or you can use it to delude yourself and say, I'll act as if everything is independent so that I only need to give 5 numbers. And then, you know, the numbers that you will be getting would be wrong because your world doesn't correspond to the independence assertions that you have put into the network. Okay, so until now we acted as if somebody gave this network. So the question is, if you have a domain, you would have to construct the network for that domain yourself, right? Okay, so how do you go about doing that? The basic idea is, you know, here is one idea, which is if you're doing it manual construction of the base network, then essentially enter the, make an ordering of the variables, make some ordering of the n variables, so they are in n factorial orderings, pick one permutation, introduce the variables one by one by one into the network. The first one, obviously, whatever you put in, it has no parent because nothing is present in the network yet. And then when you put the second one, put a link from the first one to the second one if you think second one is dependent on the first one. When you put a third one, put a link from the first to this as well as second to this if you think it's dependent on both. If you think it's only dependent on the second one, put a link from just the second one. If you think it's only dependent on the first one, put a link from the first one. Okay? So let's play this game. You know the domain of burglary, earthquake, alarm, John calls, Mary calls. Notice that when I said put a link based on if you think this way versus think the other way, that essentially means I'm asking you to have your own understanding of the domain. This idea works only if you have some idea of how the causality in the domain works. Okay? So now let me decide to introduce the variables in this order. Yeah, Mary, John, alarm, burglary, earthquake. That's the order in which I'm going to introduce them. Let's say. Okay, let's see how the network would come up. Okay, so I put in Mary calls first, then I put in John calls. Now I have to decide whether to put a link between Mary calls to John calls or not. There's always a link from the previous variables to the current variables, not the opposite way. It's a directed link. Okay, so to decide whether or not I should put a link, I have to answer this question. Do I believe that the probability of John calling, given that Mary has called, is the same as probability of John calling, prior probability of John calling, or do I think John is likely to call more or less because Mary already called? Which do you think? You know this domain. What? It is dependent, right? So I have to put a link. Okay? Now I decided to put alarm in. Now I have to ask the following questions. Is the probability alarm given John calling and Mary calling is the same as probability of alarm? If so, then I don't need to put any of the links. Okay? In fact, I could have asked this question in two different phases. Probability of alarm given Mary calling, is it the same as probability of alarm? And probability of alarm given John calling, is it the same as probability of alarm? Now in this case, in fact, it's dependent on both. Right? So I put links from both. Okay? Now I ask burglary, and I basically asking the same question, is burglary, probability of burglary given alarm independent of, is the same as probability of burglary? If not, then you have to put a link. Okay, and I can also ask probability. Now that I put this link, probability of burglary given alarm and Mary calls, is it the same as probability of burglary given alarm? If I believe that, then I have to put, if I don't think that's the case, then I have to put an extra link from Mary to burglary. If not, this link will be enough. Okay? So in this case, I assume you'll agree that in this domain, once you know that alarm has gone off, then you know you are hearing about Mary calling, John calling doesn't change your belief. If you don't believe me that, if you think it will change your belief, then you put a link. All you do if you put a link, you cannot go wrong by putting a link in the Bayes network in terms of correctness. You can go wrong in terms of efficiency because now you will need a lot more numbers. Okay? So if I introduce them in this order, I'll get this network. It too has directional arcs, but clearly there is no causality here. Okay, there's no causality here. I want you to understand something. Causality cannot be learnt easily. If it could be learnt easily, we as a civilization would have been much smarter, much faster. We used to think and we continue to think that random things cause random other things just because they're correlated. All you can observe is correlation. Okay, black cats coming in front of you, you fall under the bus a couple of times, and you think black cars falling under the bus. So you make a nice little causal theory out of it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay? Causality cannot be learned just by looking at the correlation. When you know the domain structure, knowing causality means you know a lot about the domain. Okay, you were able to answer these questions using your understanding of the causal theory of the domain. Okay, and if you know the causal theory, it turns out, so by the way, when you put in the earthquake, in this case actually there is this extra link, because if alarm goes off and you know burglary occurred, then you don't need to have earthquake occur anymore. Do you understand what I'm saying? So you need to put an extra link. Okay. So in this case, all you are doing is you're basically, either you are answering these queries yourself using the causality of the domain, or for each of these questions, you set up an experiment in the world and try to check whether independences hold. Okay? You can check whether independences hold or not without knowing how the causality in the world works. So knowing causality is a huge big deal. We take it for granted because we know how the world works, or we think we know how the world works. Okay? But if you know the causality, then it turns out that this is a network where you introduce the variables in the order of causality. Burglary first, then earthquake, then alarm, then John calls, then Mary calls. What's nice about that network? How many numbers do you need for this network? How many numbers do you need to specify this network? You need one here because there is no more number here. And then you need two here, so three. And you need four here, seven. And you need two here, nine. And you need four here, 13. Whereas here I only needed 10. Okay? Now, I could have been even crazier. I could have introduced the variables in a different order. I could have introduced it in this order. Mary calls, John calls, earthquake, burglary, alarm. And using the correlations, I would realize that these are the links. Okay? The good part is, it's only 31. It will never be more than 31. Right? But the bad part is the difference between this and this is you know the causality of the domain. If you know the causality of the domain and if you introduce the numbers in the right order, variables in the causal direction, then you win hugely. But that assumes that you know causality. That's not obvious. You don't know whether smoking causes cancer or smoking and cancer are correlated. At least that's what the, you know, Philip Morris would like you to believe. And the Cancer Association of America says, no, smoking does cause cancer. Do you understand what I'm saying? To provide a causality, it's not enough to just provide correlation. You need to provide an actual theory as to what causes what causes what causes what, such that smoking, finally, here is the metabolic reason as to why smoking winds up becoming cancer for you. Okay? We take causality for granted in the domains that we live in. Okay? In fact, one of the interesting things that we found is we made it sound as if all of... So this is easy to do. If you introduce variables in the causal order, then you need the least number of numbers. You'll wind up needing the least number of numbers. This is easy if you happen to know the causality of the domain. But suppose it's an unknown world. You don't know what causes what in this world. All you are able to see are correlations. Then what do? All you can do is pick a random, permutation, an educated guess on the order of introducing the variables, and then set up experiments to test these things. And whenever the experiment fails, then you have to put a link. That may wind up needing more numbers. So in fact, in a completely unknown domain, you would have to learn the topology of the network, or the causality of the world yourself. Okay? So this, you can go back and read this. I sort of said this all. We made it sound in this whole discussion until today that somehow all that's hard is the numbers, getting numbers. Somehow topology is easy. It's easy for you because you know the world in which you live and you have some idea of causality. If I put you in a world where you don't know what causes what, then in fact topology is just as hard as numbers. In fact, it's much harder than numbers. Okay, it's not that. So we never even talked about learning until we came to Bayes networks, where we said we have to assess learned probabilities. As if the logical knowledge that we were talking about up until then is there for the asking. You can just, pick it. It's not any more easily available than these numbers. In fact, these numbers are second order level of knowledge. The first order level of knowledge is, what causes what. And you have to learn that too. Okay? So I'll leave this here. Again, until we get into learning chapters, essentially what we are saying is we know that the way our world works, and we're just trying to write it down for our program. And if you happen to know, then you can use the causality. Okay. Any questions up until then? Okay. So now what I'm going to do is do a few more tricks to reduce the numbers that are needed to specify a network even more. Do you understand what I'm saying? So that's the trick, right? Because I always wanted to reduce the number of numbers. So for the rest of today's class, I'll be looking at two other ideas which will further reduce the number of numbers you need to specify a network. And then we'll start talking about inference techniques after that. Okay? So this, we originally had a problem, which was joint distribution requires 2n numbers to specify, and those numbers are harder to assess. We solved it up until now. We said use Bayes nets, which will reduce the numbers, and then they will get to specify them as conditional probability tables. That's what we have done till now. Okay? Now, but there is still a problem. If you solve this problem, there's one more problem, which is, but CPTs will be as big as the full joint, the CPTs can be very big. I can't say as big as the full joint. CPTs can still be very big if certain nodes have a large number of parents. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I want to drive down the numbers even more. What do I do? And what I do there is I will essentially consider reducing the number of parents, number of immediate parents. And one idea that would work when I have, too many parents, if the network is too dense, then essentially, certain nodes can have too many parents. To reduce the density of the network, I can introduce intermediate nodes. Okay? intermediate nodes such that the density of the network is reduced. We'll see an example in a minute. Okay, that winds up cutting down the number of numbers you need to do. And then the third idea would be you can parameterize the distribution. So rather than give two power, if there are m parents to a node, if there are m parents to a node, okay, rather than give 2 power m minus 1 numbers, you want to parameterize the distribution such that the distribution parameters are much fewer than m. Okay, those two we will look at. Okay, the first one is this. So here is a network where I have n parent nodes which are all connected to m children nodes. Okay, so every one of these affects every one of these. So that means every one of these nodes have n parents. So how many probabilities do you need to specify this network? You would need n here, n prior probabilities, plus each of these will require 2 power n numbers, and there are m of them, so n plus m times 2 power n. Those are the number of numbers you need. Now suppose I tell you that really, yeah, you know, they are everybody is being affected by these guys, but the way they are affected really is these are affected by some aggregate statistic of all these n variables, like for example the sum of those variables. What is affecting is not individual variables separately, but the sum of these variables wind up affecting each of these variables. Sum is an aggregate statistic. So I introduce a node which is a sum variable which is dependent on these n guys, and then it shields everybody from these n guys and it just sends one link each. This is like a hub right now, hub node, right? What's nice about it is it reduces the number of numbers you need. Okay, because now you still need n numbers here, okay, and you need 1 2 power n numbers here, but then for each of these you only need two numbers. Okay, so n plus 2 power n plus 2 times m. That reduces the number of assessments you need to make. Okay, so sometimes when you're looking at a world that you don't quite know, I mean all you know are some, you know, cause variables and the symptom variables, you need to come up with syndrome variables, the hidden variables that you don't directly see. Okay, and part of the reason for doing that is even if they don't exist, you would like to do it because that will reduce the number of probabilities that you need to specify. It makes the model simpler. Having the intermediate structure known, or at least hypothesizing an intermediate structure, reduces the complexity of the model. But on the other hand, if this is known, it's easy. If on the other hand, I'm trying to actually have to come up with, if I've been given n variables, and I say there is some base network configuration that holds for these n variables, figure it out. It's hard enough. Because there are, you know, huge number of, I mean, there's the exact number that you can compute of directed graphs on n variables. Now if I start throwing in intermediate variables too, it's not even just a function of n, it's a function of n plus whatever is the number of intermediate nodes I'm throwing in. So the learning task, if you don't know how the world works, the learning task which involves bringing in these intermediate nodes is much harder. Here you could understand it because I just told you, look, you know, I know how the world works here. Really, it's the sum of these guys that are influencing these. But if you didn't know what function of these is influencing this, then you have to try one node for each possible function of these n variables and see which one actually fits well. That's going to make you really unhappy. Okay? So, but again, knowing the domain by introducing the hidden variables, intermediate variables, you can reduce the number of probabilities. Okay, so here is an example, a real world example that you can understand. These basically are the green ones are the testable variables, and then broken, so fix it variables are in orange, which are, you know, this is a car domain. Okay, these are the green ones are the testable variables. Okay, and then these gray ones, they are not testable variables. They are hidden variables that we tend to talk about it ourselves. Our car mechanics do tend to talk about it, but they provide a way of structuring your knowledge. This is true in medicine too. There are syndromes. Apart from diseases and symptoms, there are syndromes. Right? So in this case, no charging and battery flat are things that if you introduce that, then you don't necessarily have to have orange guys hitting these green guys, all of them. They're being mediated by these gray guys. So from a purely assessment point of view, the number of probabilities you need to assess now is much smaller. But which gray nodes to introduce depends on whether or not you know anything about the domain. Okay, if you don't know anything about the domain, introducing the gray, you know, intermediate nodes will take much longer because you now have to consider all possible intermediate nodes. Okay? That's the idea of reducing the numbers by just making the network sparse by introducing intermediate variables. Okay? The second idea, as this is what I was saying, learning such hidden variables from data poses huge challenges because now, in fact, you have to consider all additional topologies for the network. Okay. Now, you know, here is one for the car insurance. Okay. The other one is compact conditional distributions, which is if I have n variables, just because I have n variables as my parents, I don't need 2 power n numbers. I should be able to get by with fewer than 2 power n numbers. Okay. Under a variety of conditions, if I know more about how my parents are influencing me, then I can basically say, oh, they seem to be influencing me using this kind of distribution. Okay, at one level, basically, the parents might be influencing the child deterministically. So, in fact, the CPT. So, if I tell you, by the way, if I tell you that here is an A. Here is A, here is B, here is C, and it turns out that C is nothing but A or B. I told you that. It still can be written as a CPT. Right? So basically, A, B, true, true, 1.0 is the probability that C is true. Okay? True, false, 1.0. is the probability that B is true, C is true. Okay? False, true, 1.0. False, false, 0. That's a CPT. Okay? In fact, what we are saying here is that CPTs are generalizing logical relations between variables. So rather than write an entire CPT, I could just say, well, here is a deterministic function that corresponds to how the parents influence the child. If that is the case. What? Okay, wake up. You. Should the CPT entries sum to 1? Anybody who is sleeping should wake up and tell me this. Because presumably if you are sleeping, you know it. So, right? Should the CPT entries sum to 1? No. Yeah, CPT entries don't have to sum to 1 at all. If they have to sum to 1, then I don't need to give all of them. I can, you know, skimp by giving, you know, one less. Okay? Again, you know, these are just sanity check questions. CPT, every entry in the CPT is needed. That's why you wind up giving it. If you want to reduce some of them, then you need to make additional assumptions. Here is an assumption where I said it's a deterministic function. Another assumption could be, so for example, another assumption could be that the way A and B influence C is a probabilistic function, but it takes a certain distribution. It's a parameterized distribution. Okay. Now, you have thought about parameterized distributions all your life. In fact, before you came to this class, you heard about Gaussian distributions or Poisson distributions. And that's because if you have a continuous variable, if you have any continuous variables, then you can never write down the full joint distribution in any extensional form. even though you can say, you know, a function can be written as a table, if it's a continuous variable, that table is infinitely large. Right? So if you, to even get go from the word get go, in continuous variables, you always looked at parameterized distribution. You looked at, for example, normal distribution. It will be a normal distribution, or it will be a Poisson distribution, or it will be an exponential distribution of one particular kind. Okay? Now, what we'll be doing is, it turns out that you can also have such things for discrete variables. In fact, Poisson is already a discrete variable distribution. But here is one that is very useful. It's a noisy R distribution. Okay? So rather than say A or B, I want to say C is sort of caused by A or B, but sometimes, but the exact way, these numbers are not ones and zeros. They can be not, you know, they can be actual real numbers between 0 and 1. Okay? So the best way, now if it is the case, it turns out that in the case of noisy R distribution, the nice thing is if you are talking about if you're talking about a variable X being influenced by K parents, U1 to UK, then you assume that really X is supposed to be an R of all of these. Okay? But if all of them fail, there may still be some possibility that it will happen. If some of them fail, it may still be. Okay? So the idea is, the picture to have in mind, you know, here I'm actually giving one idea, which is, when do you get fever? You can get fever when you have cold or flu or malaria. Okay? Now, basically, since there are three parents, you would need what? 8 numbers. But if I say that all of these are basically, they are noisy R's, that means what I'm saying is each of them will certainly, if they are true, they will certainly cause fever. Okay? But so if it's a real R, I'm sorry, if it's a logical R, then if any of them are true, then they will certainly cause fever, and so all these numbers in this table will be ones and zeros. If it's a noisy R, that means even when you happen to have cold, sometimes you don't get fever. Even when you happen to have flu, sometimes you don't get fever. Even when you happen to have malaria, sometimes you don't get fever. But then I assume that the failure probabilities, that the failure of flu to cause fever is independent of failure of malaria to cause fever. If this example doesn't look particularly impressive to you, think of you standing in front of this entire class of people with guns in front, you know, that are trying to shoot you. Okay? And I'm trying to compute the probability that you'd be dead or alive. Right? Now, you would be alive if all of them fail to shoot you. That means none of them know how to shoot. You know, this is like one of the Simpsons episodes where they try to shoot, but they're shooting everybody other than the person in the middle. Okay? For you to succeed, for you to be alive, everybody should fail to shoot you. When they shoot, you know, they miss you. Now, the probability that one of them will miss, I am saying, is independent of the probability that the other of them miss. They have no collusion. Okay? In that case, then all I need to give is the probabilities for each of these class people. What's the probability that when they try to shoot somebody, they will miss? The guys who are sleeping obviously will miss, right? And the ones who are awake may still be missing if they are not NRA members, right? Or pacifists. But different people have different probabilities of missing. And if this guy and this guy try to shoot, the probability that both will miss is multiplication of his missing and his missing. All I need is to die is one of them succeed. So probability that I will succeed is 1 minus probability that both of them will fail. Do you understand? So to now give this, you know, there are what, 35 people in the class, and if you are trying to, you know, get rid of the teacher and you're trying to shoot, right, you would have needed normally 2 power 35 different probabilities. But now with this assumption that you guys fail independently, both in shooting and in exams, right, then if once I make that assumption, then the probability that I survive can be computed just by multiplying the probabilities of failure of all of you guys, subtracting it from 1 for each possible configuration. Now, in fact, one of the interesting things is that some of you might be nice. You don't even want to lift the gun. You know, you say, teacher is a nice guy, I won't shoot. So that means flu is not true. Cold is not true. But even when flu is true and cold is true, even when you try to shoot, you might miss. Okay? So the noise CR distribution essentially captures that, and it basically, all you need to specify a noise CR distribution over n variables causing an n plus 1 variable is n failure probabilities. And all failures are independent. Okay? So now here's the numbers here, cold, flu, malaria, and I'm more interested in the not fever case in this case, because that's a failure probability. And I will wind up giving all the bold numbers. What's the probability that when malaria is alone true, fever will still not be caused? Point one. What's the probability that when flu alone is true, fever won't be caused? Point two. What's the probability that when cold alone is true, fever won't be caused? Point six. Once I give you these numbers, based on my assumption of independent failures, I given the rest of the numbers. Why? Because, for example, these, all of them, you know, in this particular case, false, true, let's see which one, no, this one. Let's say false, true, true, that means here flu is true and malaria is true, and still the fever should not be caused, so the failures have to occur together, and they're independent, so you multiply them. That's 0.2 times 0.1. And you subtract that from 1, you'll get this number. Right? If you are surprised about this, you shouldn't be, because this is just like Gaussian distributions. You know, Gaussian distribution also makes a huge assumption that the way the distribution is specified at any point, you know, for any particular value of the variable, is just this nice, you know, Gaussian function that's analytically provided. And that, and to compute that function, you only need 2 parameters. Similarly, to compute the noise CR function, you only need to compute the 3 parameters, assess the 3 parameters. Okay, and so if you have noisy R, you can also have noisy AND. Okay, and so in fact, if you throw these guys in and if you try to approximate the distributions, conditional distributions into one of the known families, such as noisy R, etc., then you reduce the number of numbers you will need to assess. Okay, so the summary of what we did today, basically, is BaseNet provides a natural representation for causally induced conditional independence. Topology plus conditional probability tables are needed to specify a Bayes network. It's generally easy for non-experts to construct if they know the causality of the domain. And you can use canonical or parameterized distributions to reduce the numbers. You can also provide hidden variables, put in hidden variables to make the network sparse and again reduce the number. And then, of course, I didn't talk about it here because we only, in the logic case, we only talked about discrete variables, so I'm continuing to talk about only discrete variables here. But the entire methodology we discussed till now also works for continuous variables. You can have Bayes networks over continuous variables. Okay? And then each of these conditional probability tables are conditional probability distributions. Table is the most extensional form for a distribution. You can always parameterize the table by, you know, saying it follows the following pattern. And the pattern is given by this function. Okay? So for example, if I have a Gaussian, then, I mean, if I think that is a continuous variable and it takes values like a, you know, Gaussian function, then it will be a conditional Gaussian distribution. Okay? I won't talk about it, but the methodology that we discussed till now is very much capable of doing all that stuff. Okay? Now, another thing basically in terms of constructing belief networks is you have to sort of decide on a vocabulary for the variables if you are going into a new domain, and then introduce any hidden variables into the network to increase the sparsity of the network. Then decide an order of introduction of the variables into the network. If you know the causality, introduce them in the causal order. Try to use canonical distributions to specify the CPTs, at the end of which you would have specified the network. After that, if you are only interested in using Bayes networks, this is the only slide you need to understand. You can miss next week's class if you only wanted to use Bayes network. Since you also want to pass the final, you need to show up for the next week's class, because we will talk about how to do inference on the Bayes network. But you know, if you are just a user, somebody has already implemented the inference algorithms. All you need is specify your network. And the happy part of it is Project 3 won't involve any coding. Not Lisp, not Java, not anything. Okay? All you will do is specify a Bayes network for, you know, nuclear disasters in Springfield, you know, for Simpson. Okay? Where I will be the expert, I will provide you elementary probabilities and you will specify the network. And then you will run the various queries using inbuilt algorithms. Okay. Before you leave, we still have a couple of minutes, let me give you a case study. You know, Springfield is a very important enough domain, and when you are able to model Springfield, you should be impressed about Bayes networks. Okay. But if you are not, then here is one more example where it's actually been useful in the real world. In fact, what's the most well-known example of Bayes network in action that all of you have seen? What? Bayes networks now. Yeah, it's kind of, you could, but that's not the one. Any of you who ever used Windows by mistake have seen the paperclip, you know, who tries to offer its unwanted advice to you, right? Right? And that's based on Bayes networks. Okay? Please don't throw the baby with the bathwater. You know, Bayes networks are more important than paperclips. But, you know, that's an actual example of, they were using, you know, they actually constructed a Bayes network, they assessed the probabilities, and they have done a lot of great work. And, you know, then the paperclip comes and tries to guess what is actually, what it is that you are flummoxed about, you know, in the middle of doing your work. Okay, less well-known for general people, but obviously much more impressive, is medical diagnostics, expert systems in medicine. Okay, Pathfinder system, for example, it tries to diagnose lymph node diseases. Okay, it deals with 60 diseases and 100 disease findings. Okay, and then when the Pathfinder system project started, there was no theory of Bayes networks. Okay, and in fact, one of the interesting things is at that time, people assumed that you don't need to deal with uncertainty using probability. There should be other shortcuts, such as just put numbers over the logical rules. Okay, logical implications. And we talked about this last time when, you know, at the time when we started talking about probabilistic reasoning. And we said, if you put those numbers, then you can get into all sorts of troubles, because grass causes rain, causes grass, causes rain, causes grass, causes rain, and there will be circularity in reasoning. Okay? What's interesting is the stages of Pathfinder sort of look at the stages of evolution of people's thinking and how to reason with probabilities, or reason with uncertain information. Pathfinder 1 was a rule-based system with just logical reasoning. Didn't care about uncertainty at all. If you have this symptom, you must have this disease. If you don't like having that disease, I'll slap you. Okay. Pathfinder 2 tried a variety of approaches for uncertainty, in fact, including certainty factors and so on, but found that simple Bayes reasoning actually is working quite well compared to the certainty factors and fuzzy logic, etc. And so then, in fact, this Pathfinder, by the time of Pathfinder 3, they stuck to Bayes reasoning. So they said, forget about certainty factors, forget about all these other things, they're not working as well. Let's stick to Bayes reasoning, which everybody knows, you know, from elementary probability theory, and then now reassess the probabilities. Now that we are taking it seriously, as against just a, you know, as what's it called, you know, as just something that you're trying to, you know, push out of the consideration, okay? You may as well take it seriously and reassess the probabilities. And they did, and they did quite well for a smaller size domain. And then Pathfinder 4, they used a Bayes network. Okay, now that's what's more interesting for us. And it was essentially in deciding this network configuration, apparently, these are their numbers, you know, this is also described in the textbook. They spent apparently 8 hours deciding on the vocabulary. But you have to remember that these 8 hours are over and above 2,500 years of medicine, where we started talking about such things as heart and lungs, and you know, it's not that we are just a farm without no insights. Okay, so they added extra 8 hours to decide on the vocabulary, given all the medical textbooks already in existence and medical doctors in existence. And they devised the topology for the network in 35 hours, where basically they being who? These are computer science people talking to medical doctors. Medical doctors know causality, or at least they pretend to know causality in their domain. Computer science people pretend to know that they know how to write the Bayes networks. And they are essentially intermediaries trying to, you know, work for them, you know. And so such, that particular role, by the way, used to be called knowledge engineer. So you are a knowledge engineer, you talk to the domain expert, you know what your tool can do, and try to express their knowledge in the way your tool can use. And by that definition, the entire operations research is knowledge engineering, because they have one tool, you know, which is integer programming. They talk to everybody and write down whatever they know into linear and integer programming equations. Okay? So these guys were using Bayes network topology for the same thing. And then after they figured out the topology of the network, then they know exactly how many numbers are needed. Okay? Basically, they required 14,000 probabilities. In doing this, they also, apart from the topology of the network, they also decided in some cases that we'll use noise ER as the CPT representation rather than the full CPT. So with all that, they needed 14,000 different numbers. And you know, this is where you have to understand. I mean, you are a lowly paid computer science person, and there is this medical doctor, you know, who is getting large amounts of money, and they have no real interest in talking to you, and you want them to answer questions so that you can make 14,000 numbers up. And they say they don't really like you anymore. Okay? Just ask me one question. You know? So you are asking for 14,000 numbers. Who is going to give it? And especially after you give all these numbers, they're going to be out of a job. Right? Why would they want to do it? Right? But in doing this, they found that the physician experts liked assessing causal probabilities. Now here's the interesting thing. When people are giving numbers, where do these numbers come from? Did they do frequency experiments? No. They just made them up. It's their guess as against yours. And you are a computer science guy, you have no clue. If they guessed it, that's an educated guess, because they already spent the money on the medical school. Right? Now the point, there is an important point here, which is, are probabilities objective or subjective? Are probabilities objective or subjective? You probably thought all your life that probabilities are objective, because there should be a way of setting up an experiment which at the asymptote gives this number. The reason a die, when you throw it up, gives 1/6 probability of coming one is if you do infinite number of die throwing experiments, exactly 1/6 percentage will have one up. But if I ask what's the probability that when this and this and this and this and this, this happens, this intermediate node will have this 15th configuration. You cannot set up infinite number of experiments. So you just make up a number. And there is a huge controversy in the probabilistic reasoning community as to whether probability should be objective or can be subjective. And the reason you keep hearing the word Bayes so much as Bayes reasoning or Bayesian probability is not because he did an elementary algebra and converted P A term, you know, P A given B into P B given A, but rather because Bayes essentially took the position, and the Bayes probability takes the position, Bayesian statistics take the position, that the probabilities don't have to be objective. They can be subjective. All you are needing to do is, if you believe this is your probabilities, then your decision should be in accordance with what your numbers are telling you. If your numbers are wrong, so be it. But at least you should be consistent with what you say you believe in. Okay? And if you, that's the big difference between the frequentist school of probabilistic reasoning and Bayesian school of probabilistic reasoning. Okay? And these numbers were made up by these doctors. They were their subjective probabilities, their collective subjective probabilities. And what Bayes networks then do is, if you believe these numbers, this is the way you should be doing the diagnosis. Okay? And then they did evaluation over 53 referral cases. And Pathfinder 3 gave 7.9 out of 10, Pathfinder 4 got 8.9 out of 10, which means it saves one additional life in every 1,000 cases. Maybe good, maybe bad, okay? But that's the kind of improvement that they were able to get. What's interesting is all of this is many years back. This was the time when Bayes networks sort of developed. Now, if you have a medical expert system, doctors don't even want to compete with it. Just as we don't compete with machines in weightlifting. We compete with, if you want to build a building, right, they bring these cranes. I don't compete with the crane. You know, the days of Hercules are over. Right? We just move the crane. We don't compete with it. Similarly, we don't compete with Bayes networks in doing diagnosis anymore. If these numbers are right, if the knowledge that you have is right, then you leave it to the Bayes networks to do the results, because we are very fallible. Okay. After the class, I'll send you an article from New Yorker several years back. I think by Atul Gawande, who is this physician who keeps writing lay public books, as to why it makes sense for us to just completely dependent. I mean, he's a physician, and he's saying doctors should completely depend on these, these things, because they're much better than them. So that's where we are. Okay. Next week we'll come back and talk about what happens under the hood when, you infer with these networks.